What's it all for?
Various artists.
Cosmologies is a new exhibition at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery, placing the practices of Nico Hinden and Naminapu Meimuru White in conversation with one another as two artists who share an approach to making, whereby cosmology is not a metaphor but a material language, a guiding force led by Indigenous knowledge pathways, a reference to law, memory, navigation, spirit energy and ecological care. Nico Hinden is a multidisciplinary artist and cultural practitioner. Grounded in Mātauranga Māori shared across generations, her practice reflects ongoing relationships to whakapapa and to taiao, where being is always being in relation, where knowledge is located in the body, in material and in time. The heart of her practice centres on the revitalisation of traditional cultural practices from Te Ao Māori, concentrating on ote, Māori bark cloth made from the paper mould plant as her primary material. A collaborative labour of love in working with ote, Hinden harvests, strips, beats and soaks its fibres across months into its final cloth-like form. In Cosmologies, Hinden presents three beautiful artworks made of ote, one along the wall mapping stellar movements in alignment with the Maramataka, Māori lunar calendar, and two large quilts hung as crescents encircling Naminapu Meimuru White's works within, creating a constellation of cosmology within the gallery space itself. I had a kōrero with Nico Hinden about Cosmologies and her overall practice.
Kia ora, tēnā tātou. Ko Nico tōku ingoa, he uri ahau no te hokianga whakapaukarakia ko ngā pahi ko te raroa ngā iwi. He kiri aute ahau. I am an aute maker, and the word that we came up for that is a kiri aute. And I've been working with aute since 2013 now, and I started practicing full-time as an artist about 8 years ago. I guess my whole life and my whole artistic practice is dedicated to the life cycle of the plant. So I harvest ote during the summertime, and I tend to paint and do more processing during the winter time. And a lot of my practice has been about kind of formalizing or researching specific process that Māori did to make ote. And that comes from researching our old tools and making our old tools in the way that our tūpuna did. I think a lot of my practice is underpinned by a desire to kind of use natural materials, resources that our tūpuna used, and through that I feel like my connection to the environment is strengthened, and also my hononga to my whakapapa and my pepeha. And I guess that is, yeah, really the thing that underpins my practice is only using natural processes that our tūpuna used to use.
In your current exhibition at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery, Cosmologies, your work is placed in conversation with Naminapu Meimuru White as two artists who share an approach to making whereby cosmology is a material language, not just a concept, with yourself working in the context of Mātauranga Māori and Meimuru White in Yolngu cosmology. To begin with speaking about the show, I thought we could speak a little to your relationship to these ideas of cosmology, celestial bodies and stars which ground the exhibition. A loaded question, I know, but would you like to speak a little as to what they mean to you personally?
Yeah, that's so beautiful, and it's so important to me. Also mention Naminapu's beautiful work. She's like a kuia over in Te Whenua Moemoea, and her work is stunning. And I, you know, they are really our tuakana in many respects, especially with the mātauranga around celestial bodies. And yeah, I guess where can I start with this question? I think I first started learning about the stars when I lived in Hawaii, and that was through a navigational perspective when I was hanging out with the crew at Sand Island, the Hokulea crew, who were dry docking and sanding hoku to prepare for probably their worldwide voyage. And I was with an apprentice navigator at the time who was training for their first sail to Tahiti, using the star compass or, you know, non-instrumental navigation techniques that he was learning. And so I was just really in the right place at the right time. And I learned, you know, I was hanging out with Nainoa Thompson and Bruce Blankenfield and Kaiulani Murphy and all these amazing people, and learning about the stars. And of course, they're all upside down over there compared to what they look like here. Over there, I learned about the star compass, which is the conceptual framework for finding direction from the perspective of being inside a waka. And then the edge of your compass is the horizon, 360 degrees around you. And you use the stars to kind of as anchor points to find where you are, and also to calculate speed and distance, and kind of keep on your sail plan. So that was where my interest first started in navigation. And then I came back to Aotearoa. I did a few sails in Hawaii, you know, short little sails, and went to Tahiti when Hokule went to Tahiti. So I was following her around the world. And then when Hoku came to Aotearoa, I stumped on Hoku from Tāmaki Makaurau to Golden Bay and back up, and that was a really amazing experience, connecting with also all of the other Aotearoa crews and waka, and that was a really special time in my life. And then I guess I also, from those experiences and just seeing the power of Hokulea, I started to work with Ōte and kind of reclaim that mātauranga, because I guess I saw the value of what it was to create, of like the movement of reclamation of knowledge, and how that built community and was really powerful, made a really powerful impact on people's sense of identity and connection to the identity. And it created something physical for people to do. And that was had a really big impact on me. And then when I started working with Ōte and sort of started learning more about the whetū and our, you know, our Māori names and our stories around the stars. And then I read Rangi Mātāmua's book, Matariki, which is really important. And we, you know, Matariki is coming up. And in that book, I realized, oh, there are some stars that are related to the maramataka, or how do I say it, like the months of the year were signified by morning stars, just like Matariki signifies the first month of the year. Then there's Te Rua or Takura, which is Sirius, which signifies the second month of the year, and so on and so forth. And so while I knew some of these stars, like Takuru and Potu Te Rangi, I didn't know other stars like Painga Whawha. And I guess this series of star maps that I have in the gallery at the moment is an extension of my learning about navigation. And this time it's also learning about what I kind of call land stars, which we use to count time. So I think the main thing with these star maps and creating these star maps, I guess they are, I've used them throughout my learning journey to help me learn first the star compass and then the declination of stars, so where the stars rise and which house they belong to. And then going on from that, what stars are rising during what time of the year. So I introduced a time element, and then this series is looking at the way that all of the stars move throughout the whole year. So when you look at them as a body of work, you can see, oh, the stars are rising earlier and earlier each month, and these are the stars that are coming up in the morning, and this is how it changes throughout the year. So those are like seasonal indicators. And I guess I think it became important to me to learn these because, as Rangi Mātāmua always says, you know, one of the greatest and most significant things that colonization did to us was it disconnected us from our sense of time and space. So it disconnected us from these signals that the environment gives us that indicate the seasonal changes. So, you know, like when the mullet are running, or when the pūtawa are blooming, or when kōwhai are blooming, or, you know, all of those little things, as well as the stars, which stars are rising, those help us tell the time. But now we have a imported system of time, the Gregorian calendar, and we have kind of lost our connection to those other symbols of time. And I think it's, for me, I'm wanting to learn so that I can be more connected to my pepeha and my environment and, yeah, my cultural identity as a wahine Māori.
Your practice is incredibly materially driven, centering this reinvigoration of traditional cultural practices from Te Ao Māori, using ote Māori bark cloth made from the paper mulberry plant. If I can take you back to when you first approached working with this material, what first drew you to ote?
That's a great question. I think what I love about ote is how physical it is, and how you have to really engage in the plant. The way that the plant grew impacts how it transforms into cloth. And I guess in having to engage in all of these environmental factors that kind of come out in the cloth and are represented there in the cloth, and then you being this instrument to help the cloth, the bark, then transform into cloth, and how physically demanding that process is as well for my body. I think I was really interested in just that process of transformation, the science in it. And I guess you, as with a lot of processes, more material processes in Te Ao Māori, you're always like, wow, how did our tupuna work this out? You know, this is amazing. And I think just the depth of that knowledge is never ending, and you can really continue to learn. And I've been doing this for 13 years, and I continue to learn from the plant, and I continue to learn from these processes, and I am always, learning new things about, you know, how our tupuna would have, you know, made these little adjustments to the tools to improve the process slightly, you know, and our tools are so crucial, and they would have all been made, you know, using hoanga, sandstone, using shark's teeth to make grooves, and ponamu and toki, and yet the tools were so efficient, and they were made in very specific ways. Even a millimeter difference in the shape can make a huge difference in the way that you process the ote. So I guess I just love discovering, or, you know, relearning all of those things. And I think for me as well, when I'm physically, you know, just the same as when I'm sure like voyagers and navigators are sailing on waka, you know, you're living it. You're living the practice, and you're living it. And I think that makes us feel closer to our tupuna when we're working with these materials and these tools.
You kind of spoke to it a little bit there, but I can imagine it is quite an immersive, sometimes collaborative, and certainly bodily experience working with ote, harvesting, stripping, beading, and soaking the fibres into their final form that we see in the show. You spoke a little to your process there, but how much of your process then feels like, I guess, a relinquishment of control and letting the material lead you? When do you know when the process of turning the ote into this cloth-like material is complete?
That's so funny. I think I always get nervous before a project when I say, oh yes, I'm going to do this, because at the end of the day, I don't know if I'll necessarily be able to achieve the idea in the way that I've kind of constructed it in my mind. And I think that's why ote, you know, processing ote is such a humbling practice, because it is collaborative, and there's so many factors and during the process. For example, the ote's relationship with water and how long it's soaked in the water changes how soft the fibers are and how much they can be folded, or if maybe they can't be folded and stretched and beaten in that way. So there's a lot of different factors that influence the way the pieces turn out. And I always think, you know, when I'm in the beading phase and the harvesting phase, you're really on ote time. Whatever else you're doing in your life really has to take a back seat, because the priority has always got to be processing your ote. And I think for me, it's really important, especially in Aotearoa, where trees are, they're not scarce, but, you know, I value and I treasure every single tree that I harvest, and I don't want anything to go to waste. So ensuring that I honour each plant and respect each plant and try and let it live its best life is really important, or else you're just, cutting down a tree and you're wasting it. And that's not really part of my philosophy. But also, within our harvesting tikanga, our harvesting protocols that, come from Te Whare Pōro, which is the House of Fibre Arts that Harakeke belongs to, we have a lot of tikanga around the correct way to do things, which is really important to follow, and something that I try and pass on to all of my tauira, my apprentices, and the students that I teach. I'm always emphasizing the importance of following tikanga, and then your integrity as a maker, as your capacity, your ability to kind of stick to that and honor the raka.
What I think is really cool, I guess, adding on to that, is reading the hanging ote cloth works from behind, or like seeing them backlit. I really noticed it in the show. I felt like it made such a difference as a viewer to really see those fibers and the stitching and a bit of that process with a lot more clarity. In presenting the works, was that intentional in installing them, that the viewer can really encounter and engage with them from every angle?
Yeah, I think when I presented the quilt the first time in Sao Paulo at the Sao Paulo Biennale in 2023, I hung it, that pavilion has these beautiful windows and this beautiful natural light that kind of pulls through, and I hung this piece, and I think it looked really beautiful because it was backlit by the natural light. And I think in the show, it is really beautiful how you can kind of walk all around the pieces, and we kind of made it so that the pieces are curved and encircle the ote and encircle Nami Napu's work, just to emphasize, the cyclical nature of time and our celestial bodies and the way that they move, and also our hina, our moon, and all of her phases and phases that she goes through. So I feel like a really important part of these works, these quilts, is the transparency of being transparent about the labor that's involved in them, and being able to see all of the trees, because these quilts are about labor, collective labor, material transformation, but these works are really honest works. So all the pieces are beaten, or what I call freshly beaten, so beaten straight from the tree, and they are kind of quite raw, so you can see all of the side branches and all of the holes and the whole life of the plant. And some of the trees are really, really big, and so some of the cloths are really big as well, and they've all just been sewn together as they are, and then a grid has been applied over the top of them, like as if it's a quilt. So there's this combination of the kind of organic pieces sewn together and then this grid kind of being overlaid on top of it. So yeah, and I should mention that my friend Katie Middleton, who I met to Elam with, and who was also a student of Matua Dante Bonica, who just recently passed away, she made all of the aho muka, which is the cordage, and on the large piece, which is called Te Ahu Rewa Ohine Te Iwiwa, it's got about 200 meters of muka aho cordage.
Wow.
That she herself, yeah, and that's what is used to sew all of the pieces together. Yeah, so there's a lot of labor involved, but also these works speak to that relationship between the ote and the muka, because there are some processes that overlap within the process of extracting muka and also in the process of peeling and processing the ote.
You kind of spoke to it a little bit at the beginning when we were talking about cosmology more generally, but there is this beautiful work along the wall in the show which charts stellar movements in alignment with the Maramataka, where here cosmology is not a metaphor but a method. In that work, you've hand-painted onto the ote using natural pigments and designs informed by customary Māori forms to mark these movements in alignment with the Maramataka. Would you be able to speak a little to this process of mark making and what informs the final form in this painted element of the work in relation to cosmology as a method of making?
Yes, sure. Big question. I think I'll start off by saying the main difference between the quilt and the process I've used to process the oti in the quilt and also the way that I've processed the pieces that I've painted is that the pieces in the quilt have been through a single beading process, and then the pieces on the wall have been soaked and they've been retted or fermented, and then they are two pieces beaded together, and that's why there's no holes in them, and then the texture is quite different. It's much more like a texture, like a papery texture. And then the marks on these ote or this the taurida, they come from Tainiko and Tukutuku. That's the lineage of those marks, and that's because these patterns come from a weaving traditions, which are wahine patterns, and of course are, you know, woven with the hands of our wahine Māori. And that was always really important when I first started to make ote, was to think about, oh, what are the appropriate marks, what are the appropriate taurida to be applying to this ote, because we have no examples in any of our museums. So I was the first, and I felt like that was quite an important decision and distinction to make at the time, because I felt like I was, you know, setting a precedent. And also the star maps, they kind of came about because at the time I was learning about navigation in Hawaii, and it took me a long time to start painting on the ote. It took me 5 years to learn how to vaguely make the cloth, and then I started painting on it after that. So I had a long time to think about it, and the star maps came about as a device to, as I said before, to learn about the star houses. And conceptually, this in the star compass, they say that the stars, they live in houses underneath the horizon. So for example, Matariki and Hokulea, they live in the star house of Kāinga in the northern quadrant. And, you know, these stars rise from the house and then they travel across the sky, and depending on your latitude will depend on the angle that the stars will cross the sky, and then they'll hit sink back into their star house on the western horizon, but the same star house. And so the star maps were to help me memorize which stars belonged in which houses. And so each line is the declination, so it relates to their degrees. So for example, Tautoru, Orion's Bow, rises exactly 0 degrees east, and then Hokulea is like 24 degrees north of east. And yeah, so every star has its own declination, and that is in relation to the lines. And I think for me, making the star maps, it was kind of a predetermined design. And I liked that, having this decisions kind of taken away from me. The lines were there where they were in the sky, you know, and the niho represented the star houses. And yeah, and I guess you can see the pattern across the year in the way the stars move or rise at different times, because each star, where it's placed on its line, is determined by the time that it either rises or the time that it sets. So yeah, that's sort of my philosophy or my methodology around the star maps. And then they are, yeah, ultimately just tools to learn about our calendar system, our stellar lunar calendar, and our whetū, and the new whetū that I had to learn to make these star maps.
And lastly, do you have any hopes for viewers engaging with the show?
I think the main purpose of these works and the star maps is to help people understand that a Māori concept of time is different from the Gregorian calendar, and to also recognise that Matariki isn't the only important star in our cosmologies, and that we have other significant stars that represent other things. And also, I guess, to try and connect with, you know, not just our whetū, not just our stars as indicators of time, but also you can still do it living in Tāmaki Makaurau, you know, noticing when the Manuka are blooming, or when kōwhai are blooming, or is there a, yellow-footed kawa tree somewhere that you've noticed, or, you know, what are the birds doing at certain times, and when do the ducklings walk across the road? I guess there's all of these kinds of factors that we can all notice in our environment that will help us become more connected to the taiao and the place where we live, and also, I guess, the place that we should be trying to give back to.
That was artist Nico Hinden speaking to me about her current joint exhibition with Naminapu Meimuru White at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery, Cosmologies. The exhibition is on now until the 9th of August, so be sure to go check it out.